are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Brian Peacock here with you once again on this Tuesday episode of the show. Monday was an off day for 49ers training camp, the first off day after they had some padded practices over the weekend. If you want to hear some of the reports about what went on at 49ers training camp, go back to Monday's episode with Eric Crocker, especially getting into the defensive backs and wide receivers. I will have Rob Lauder of Niners Wire joining me later in the week. Of course, a Winky Wednesday coming up tomorrow on the show. And then Oscar Aparicio, who is the host of the Better Rivals podcast, and will be joining me next Monday. And we're going to talk a little bit about some scheme stuff with the 49ers. So that should be fun. And then, of course, continuing to talk about everything going on in 49ers training camp. So that's what's coming up ahead on the podcast. Today's show will be all about the mailbag. We're going to get into what people are excited about, worried about, and all of the latest news coming down from 49ers camp here to start the 2018 season. A quick reminder to subscribe, rate, review the show. We're on iTunes, Spotify, everywhere. Google Play, Google Podcasts is the new app that they have. Stitcher. Everywhere you can find podcasts, you can find Locked On 49ers and all the podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network. You can find me on Twitter at BDPeacock. That's where most of these mailbag questions are coming from. Also, some emails, LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. If you would like to shoot an email my way, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook as well. We're everywhere. The Locked On 49ers podcast is well represented, including LockedOn49ers.com. So let's start with to clean up a little bit of news and some things from early in camp that I had some notes on. And really, on Monday's show, we talked a lot about the 49ers wide receivers versus defensive backs and what some of those players looked like and some of those matchups looked like from Eric Crocker in camp. But there is some other notes to talk about here. Let's go with the starting offensive line, that the ones that showed up at training camp, working with the ones, of course, left tackle Joe Staley, left guard Lakin Tomlinson, I wanted to call him LaDainian Tomlinson almost, who was re-upped this offseason, earned himself a new contract from the 49ers. Newly signed free agent center Weston Richburg. Mike McGlinchey was at right tackle, and a lot has been made about the Jonathan Cooper versus Joshua Garnett battle for the right guard job, but neither one of those guys was running with the first team to start camp at right guard. It was actually Mike Person, who the 49ers brought in as a free agent, who has worked with Kyle Shanahan before with the Falcons, and he's got some versatility. That tells me a lot. That tells me that Mike Person is a darn near lock to make this roster. If he's already working with the ones, I'm guessing it's because he knows the offense. Running with the ones at right guard, he's also had some experience playing tackle, playing center in the league, so I think that versatility is something that the 49ers like. He could potentially be that player, even if he doesn't win the starting job, to be a backup at multiple spots along the line, which is important when you're only dressing seven offensive linemen on game day. So Joshua Garnett was running with the twos, and by the way, Jonathan Cooper is still on the PUP list. He's not ready to come back and do full participation with practice just yet. He had some off-season minor surgery. Left tackle was Murphy, left guard J.P. Flynn, center Magnuson, Eric Magnuson, the second team center for the 49ers to start camp. Joshua Garnett at right guard with the second team, and then Gary Gilliam at right tackle. And then I did read somewhere that Darrell Williams Jr. was working in with the ones when Joe Staley got an off day, so he's somewhere between one and three on the depth chart at left tackle. So that's just some interesting notes on the offensive line. And again, that's day one of camp, and who knows what that's going to look like once they put the pads on and continue to play into the preseason. And we might see a lot of guys moving in and out of there, and as the 49ers try to figure out who they really want to be their starting and backup offensive lineman in 2018. But there's going to be a nice little battle there after. I mean, there's the four locks, which is Staley, Tomlinson, Richburg, and McGlinchey. And then there's going to be a fight. There's going to be a fight for a lot of spots. But I mean, I got to believe right now that really I'd be surprised if Mike Person isn't one of those seven guys who's suiting up on game day, just because He was running with the ones already in camp and has some versatility to play both tackle and center as well as guard. And the defense was ahead of the offense early in camp from almost all reports, and then the offense fired back a little bit, and we saw some big plays from wide receivers and the quarterbacks, both C.J. Beathard and Jimmy Garoppolo, making some throws in camp. But the defense was ahead of the offense early in camp, which is to be expected, especially considering it's pretty much the same 11 that ended the season in 2017 on defense for the 49ers. Lots of young players that are expected to take a big leap, but that all have experience. They have some experience under their belt already. Adrian Colbert, coming out of nowhere as a seventh rounder, got some work as a starting free safety now and is expected to take over that job as a full-time starter in 2018. Same story with the Jaquaski Tartt, who, you know, had a rough start to his career but really showed out last year and earned that starting strong safety job. So both of those guys, a lot is expected of them. And then Akella Witherspoon, who was not quite ready to roll as a rookie to start the season last year, really grew as a player and grew some confidence toward the end of the year and is expected to hold down the other starting spot opposite Richard Sherman. A lot of question as to whether or not Richard Sherman's actually 100% after he really looked like he was standing still compared to Marquise Goodwin, who blew by him in some one-on-ones, and that was well documented on Twitter and around the internet this weekend. But definitely not in the worried about Richard Sherman camp just yet. And as Eric Crocker noted on Monday's podcast, a lot of scheme stuff there. It's not going to be just Richard Sherman sitting there and a wide open football field going against a guy who's running 4.27 that has everywhere to run around and past him. That's not the way it's going to go on defense. They can do some things scheme wise. He can play off, he can play press and have a guy over the top. So it's not yet time to worry about Richard Sherman, but if he shows up in preseason games and people are blowing by him and he really has lost too many steps, then maybe you start to get worried a little bit. And there's actually a nice little mailbag question and an interesting math equation about Richard Sherman that we'll get to very shortly here. Let's see, what other notes? C.J. Beathard, yeah, making pretty throws, back-to-back practices to start off camp. I saw a nice throw to the rookie seventh-rounder Richie James down the right sideline between two defenders. The Jimmy Garoppolo to Pierre Garçon chemistry has yet to materialize. He had zero catches for a few days. He did make a couple catches, I believe, in Sunday's practice. But the Garoppolo to Goodwin connection seems to be picking up where they left off last year, which is a good sign. And DeForest Buckner, who was basically practically apologizing to the offense for how difficult he was making things on them early in the season. And there's a cool article from Dylan DeSimone on 4th and 9, and it also references a Matt Barrows article talking to Chris Kiffin, who was the 49ers' new pass rush coordinator, and how DeForest Buckner is going to be the teeth of that pass rush and going to be the trap. They're going to try to set the trap to send people his way. And he led the league for interior defensive linemen with 19 quarterback hits last year, according to Pro Football Focus, and only had 3 sacks. And so that's a big disparity. He a lot of pressure and a step late way too often. So if they are able to force quarterbacks into his teeth, that would be a great sign, and I think his production could jump, and I think it's going to anyways, and he just has to find that extra step, just get there a step sooner, and DeForest Buckner is going to be one of those guys who's just putting up crazy production, and then get the recognition that he really deserves around the NFL and the national media, which he hasn't quite gotten yet, even though a lot of people know how good he is. They don't maybe know how quite exactly how good DeForest Buckner is. From Ian Rappaport, Seattle Seahawks star safety Earl Thomas not reporting to training camp. The 6-time Pro Bowler is entering the last year of his 4-year extension signed in 2014, and his play has clearly earned a new contract. Those in Seattle view him as the centerpiece of that defense, but he will be at home when training camp begins, and that is exactly what happened. Earl Thomas not at training camp. It's a good news for 49ers fans and really any team that plays against the Seahawks, because Earl Thomas is a straight-up stud at free safety, and a lot of people think he's really what made that defense tick all along, even more so than Richard Sherman and Bobby Wagner and some other Michael Bennett, some great players on that Seattle Seahawks defense. Most people believe that it was Earl Thomas that really made that thing tick. And I don't know what the Seahawks are doing, but they might be looking ahead, and maybe he's another veteran player that the Seahawks might be trying to replace in the near future. We'll see how that thing goes. And there's been some trade rumors around Earl Thomas, but still a very good player and a great player. The Seahawks got to figure out what they're doing with Earl Thomas because, he's too good to be. I mean, and the Seahawks, are they completely rebuilding? What are they doing? Because they're kind of half-assing it a little bit, and maybe they are a little too arrogant about what they can do without some of these stud players that really carried him for a long time. Obviously, you still have Russell Wilson. Pete Carroll's still there at head coach, but the offensive line is a question mark. They've never really put in any stock into their running back position, and then all of a sudden they throw a first-round pick at Rashad Penny, who, in my opinion, I don't know if he was a first-round player, even though I do like Rashad Penny. And so, but they didn't, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with the Seahawks, and they got to get a lot of young players that they need to step up to replace some of these stud veterans that are now gone, in Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor, and now possibly Earl Thomas. Who knows what's going to go on there? So the Seahawks might be in trouble. But when you got a stud quarterback in Russell Wilson, I think they might be okay, but definitely trending in the wrong direction for the Seahawks. But it's not, they're not quite blowing it up yet, but maybe they are on their way to doing that if someone like Earl Thomas is sent packing. Okay, it's mailbag time, but I do want to tell all of the listeners about our friends at Nordic Track. If you're like me, you probably lack some motivation to be going to the gym all the time and really putting in the regular effort to get out, get to the gym, come back home and do all that. Or just don't like going to the gym at all, period. You know, sometimes it's hard to find time to go to the gym. You know, we've all got a busy schedule. Maybe you need the motivation of a trainer or a group class, but that's time consuming, could be costly. Trying to put that all together, timing-wise, do you ever wish the gym could come to you? Well, that's where Nordic Track comes in. And by the way, at NordicTrack.com, they have some adjustable dumbbells, which is something I've definitely been looking at, and I was pretty excited when I saw that. But we'll get to that. Nordic Track has a series of training equipment to give you amazing workouts in the convenience of your home, including treadmills, exercise bikes, incline trainers, and of course strength. And I mentioned those adjustable dumbbells, which is really cool technology and something that's really nice to have in your home. Even if you don't have an entire full gym, you can get like one machine and adjustable dumbbells and be pretty set and get yourself a pretty great workout at home. Interesting about Nordic Track, you can join high energy streamed workouts any time of the day without stepping foot out of your door, so you can get those group workouts at home. Join streamed workouts in both studios and exotic destinations around the world. Start your day with a run through the streets of Paris and with cross-training in the shores of Thailand, or work out on an African safari. Workouts are led by the world's top personal trainers to ensure you meet your fitness goals. Special offer for Locked On 49ers listeners: get $75 off your Nordic Track purchase by visiting nordictrack.com/lockedon and using the offer code Locked On. That's one word, Locked On. Again, visit nordictrack.com/lockedon. Use your promo code Locked On during checkout to save $75 off your purchase. Let's start this mailbag segment with a question from Sean. Not even really a question. This is an observation from Sean, who came with some math for you guys. I was a little bit worried when I saw equations when I opened up this email. First, he says, congrats on the new addition. He says, the return on investment of having a kid begins around the three-month mark. Okay, I'm about 6 weeks in, so three-month mark. Looking forward to that. Right now, it's a mountain of diapers. I think there's still a pretty good return on investment right now, but I'm looking forward to, you know, I want to, like, rough house with my son. You know, I want to, like, I want to put a baseball glove on my son's hand and try to teach him some hand-eye coordination stuff. I'm very much looking forward to that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's good to know that things will start to get a little bit more fun around the three-month mark and not so much just sleep and poop as it is right now, which is still, you know, not bad. I'm having a good time with it. Let's see. He's talking about he read the 53-man projection yesterday from Eric Branch, and irked at how many dedicated special teamers there were. Mostert, Dakota Watson, Burbridge all made it. And The last guy bumping off the roster was my guy, Richie James, off the final 53. He says, how many special teamers does a team really need besides kicker, punter, long snapper? I fully understand the need for Mostert, but figure guys like Brock Coyle, Kendrick Bourne, etc., can fill those needs while also adding significant value on offense and defense. Yeah, so, and I think Kyle Shanahan talked about this in the press conference last week about how it's rough because you have this guy who's an offensive lineman who suits up and doesn't play, and then you have players who are not contributing that are just on special teams, and he says it's a lot easier to just throw a guy in and have him run down and make a tackle versus you have to throw a tight end or somebody on offensive line, the game's over. Like, you can't just throw a guy in at guard, right, a tight end or whatever. So for that reason, I get it, and I think it sounds like Kyle Shanahan gets it too. And I think you nailed it, because there's really only, like, usually the kickers, maybe a returner, long snapper, and then maybe one gunner who's just dedicated, because otherwise those guys have to contribute. Like last year, Dakota Watson, he's the backup at strong side linebacker and then really good on special teams. And Mostert is really good on special teams. He's a gunner, but he can also be the number three running back for you. So you have to provide value. Or, you know, Brock Coyle, starting a middle linebacker, and he might be the starting middle linebacker in week one for the 49ers. So you've got to be able to do some things. And I think you can have, you know, it's a lot easier to find someone to run down and cover kicks than it is to find someone who could be a middle linebacker, or to find someone who can be an offensive lineman. So, or be a really good, you know, fifth wide receiver even. So, but a lot of these guys who are backups have to play or be forced at least to be good enough to play special teams, or else it makes it difficult, because that's your entire special teams unit is almost your entire special teams unit is built from backups. So these guys got to be able to do that at least a little bit to get on the team. But I'm with you. I'm not taking someone like, let's say, Aaron Burbridge over Richie James just because he's better at special teams and that's it. But if Burbridge shows he's just as good as a wide receiver and he can also play special teams, then yeah, I get that. But I'm with you, Sean. I don't think they need that many dedicated special teamers, but I think it might be a tiebreaker in some cases, and I think a lot of these guys will be able to contribute on offense or defense as well. And now onto his observation here. Richard Sherman not being 100%, I was wondering, is 60% of Richard Sherman better than 120% of Dante Johnson? Okay. The answer, of course, comes down to math. Looking at PFF scores, Sherman's last year was 82.7 and Johnson's was 36.9. So if you go 60% of Sherman's 82.7 grade, that gives you a 49.62 grade. Dante Johnson's 36.9, 120% of that is only 44.28. So as you can see, Sean says, Sherman still comes out on top and still outperforms Johnson's 2017 score, even if he's only 60%. All right. Thank you for that, Sean. I appreciate that math. And I think that was a mailbag question last week about if I would take Sherman at 70% versus somebody else. I can't even remember who the comparison was, but there's your answer. The answer is Richard Sherman. Let's go to Quest for a Six Pack. He says, random question. Have you ever been recognized in public and acknowledged for the great 49ers work that you do? No, I have not been acknowledged for my great 49ers work in public. Well, maybe aside from when we did our live draft show, but people showed up knowing that we were going to be there. He says, I saw Chris Biederman at San Jose Airport and said, what up? I also did the same to Kenny Wiggins. It was when he was on the 49ers practice squad. They both had different reactions. Oh, man, see, that's where that ends. I want to hear what the reactions were, especially from Biederman. It would be hilarious if Biederman big-timed you at the airport. that'd be fun. What up, Chris? They screw off, man. I don't have time for you. No, Chris Biederman's a nice guy. I bet he was super gracious and super nice if you ran into him at the airport or the coffee shop or wherever, at the bar having a pint. Wherever you ran into Chris Biederman, I'm sure he'd be a very nice guy. But no, I haven't been recognized in public. When I used to work at KMBR, and I wasn't even an on-air person, I would get on the air occasionally to say, you know, something. But there was times when we would do events like at the Acme Chop House. We do San Francisco Giants pregame shows, and you know, we set up a tent out there, or what used to be the Acme Chop House, and fans are crazy. Sometimes they're, I'd be surprised. I'd said like two things on the air at that point, and they'd be like, "Oh yeah, Peacock, I know you." And then people would just be super excited to be around, you know, knowing, having the leader, the power of the leader and the 50,000 watt blowtorch. People know about it and people get excited about it. So, that's about as close. Yeah. Not really having people run me down on the street talking about Locked On 49ers. I do occasionally run into people who have listened to Locked On 49ers, know the podcast, and they usually don't even know that I'm the guy doing it at the time. So the answer is definitely no to that one. Thank you for that question. Let's go to Kevin on Twitter. He said, on a scale from 1 to 10, 10 being the highest, how likely is it that Jimmy G will connect with one or two wide receivers or tight ends this season on a good highlight reel worthy pass, kind of like how he did with Selleck time against Atlanta last season? And if so, do you think Dante Pettis will be a major role in one of those passes? So the first part of that question, Kevin, scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the highest, the answer is 11. That's how likely it is that Jimmy G will connect on one or two highlight reel-worthy passes this season. There's going to be a lot of passes thrown, and there's going to be a lot of highlight passes thrown by Jimmy Garoppolo. There's going to be deep passes to Marquise Goodwin. He's going to blow by the defense and catch an 80-yard touchdown again like he did last year, but it was from C.J. Beathard last year. There's going to be some Selleck time. There's going to be a lot of seam passes thrown to George Kittle. There's going to be some touchdown throws there. And I think we're going to see Dante Pettis making some highlight reel plays as maybe a kick returner, and I think as a receiver as well as the season goes on. So the answer to that is yes, and 10 out of 10, 11 out of 10, Jimmy G is going to be involved with some highlight reel worthy plays, multiple. All right, let's see. We've got time for a couple more. Let's go to email from Jeremy. Do you believe that the whole negative talk about Jimmy G's small sample size and saying he's unproven by some expert analysts, quote unquote, out there can be negated as early as game one if the Niners pull off a win in the season opener against the Vikings? Absolutely. It's definitely a what have you done for me lately kind of a league, and people are freaking out about Jimmy Garoppolo after 5 weeks of brilliance down the stretch last year for the 49ers, and then they have a whole offseason to sort of look at things through a different lens and be like, oh, wait a second, there's just a few games. He's only started seven games in his career. No, he's won all seven of those games. But let's pump the brakes, and that makes sense. That's the level-headed approach to it, and I don't think you're a hater if you're looking at Jimmy Garoppolo thinking, okay, he's, you know, let's pump the brakes here. He's not there yet. He hasn't proven that yet, but he could prove that very quickly. I think knocking off a very good Minnesota Vikings team on the road in week one would be a massive step in shutting up some people who are either anti-Jimmy or just unsure about Jimmy. And one more email, then we'll hit some Twitter. Email from Dan. Is there any real news about the team talking to Dez? No. Dez Bryant, I think that thing's done. And Dez is like doing a good job of trying to not get signed by any team, crushing his former team, talking about his owner and defensive MVP and offensive lineman, and just crushing everybody from his former organization. That's not a good way to prove that you're a great locker room guy and really give a new team confidence in signing you, especially with the way his play has gone down and hasn't been separating. At least last year wasn't really separating. I watched some Dez Bryant when he became available, and it was like, oh man, he's not the same Dez that I remember. I mean, this is a guy who's a 6'2 punt returner in college, supremely athletic. Every catch you see him make in 2017 is contested, and he's just pulling down rebounds, basically. He's a power forward now. So unless he found a step, found a little bit of wiggle that was lost, or maybe it was a motivation or something, and maybe an angry Dez is better than a not angry Dez, so maybe a team will want to capitalize on that. But yeah, Dez Bryant for the 49ers, it's a big no. Not really hearing anything concrete with them even talking to him or having any interest, and at this point, it wouldn't make a lot of sense to me. So I asked on Twitter what people were fired up about or maybe bummed about from the first weekend of training camp. This from Joshua. He says, I'm fired up that it's acceptable to start to plan to watch football again, like mark the calendars and call the tight bros from way back and bring the guac. I love that. Got to bring the guac, too, for sure. So definitely pumped. Football's coming, man. There's a game this week. There's a game in 2 days. Hall of Fame game. 49ers, August 9th, next Thursday, be playing some preseason football against the Cowboys. So it's here. This is fun. This is awesome. Players are on the field practicing, preparing for the 2018 season. Drew is pumped for Bourne, setting up as a number two wide receiver after Pierre Garçon is gone. Okay. Also fired up for Richie James, of course. Yeah. Got to be fired up for my boy Richie James. By the way, there was a podcast I interviewed Richie James. If you search at LockedOn49ers.com or go to iTunes or wherever and go look and find that podcast. It was a fun conversation. The guy's motivated, plays big, got a big heart. I like Richie James, man. He's definitely going to be a fan favorite. I think he's going to earn some fans, especially when he's going up against number three DBs in the second halves of these preseason games and just lighting it up, and C.J. Beathard is just slinging it to him. He's going to make some guys look bad that might not even make other rosters, but maybe he'll make the 49ers roster. Let's see. From Mike, who do you think starts at nickel corner opening day? I'm going to say Jimmy Ward on that. I like what Kawan Williams has done for the 49ers and have some confidence in him. DJ Reed, I think, is a long-term guy. So I think they have three players who I don't have a problem with jumping in the nickel, but I think Jimmy Ward will be the player who is the first up at nickel when it's all said and done, if the poor guy can stay healthy this year. Let's go to Adam. He says, can we package Garnett and some picks in trade with Oakland for Mac? No. That answer is no. Well, it depends on the picks, I guess. If you're throwing, if you throw two first-round picks in Garnett, then maybe. But I think Garnett's not really a factor in a trade if you're trying to target Khalil Mack. And I will say, by the way, that Khalil Mack is probably not going to get traded anyways. It wouldn't matter what you were throwing at the Oakland Raiders. They'll figure out a contract situation. But and if the Raiders, let's be honest, if the Raiders were willing to trade Khalil Mack, I don't think the 49ers would be that team. And I think there was an email maybe or a tweet about that to me about why not the 49ers and Raiders getting together. And it's just not, they're not that friendly of organizations. They, you know, they compete in the same market. You know, they're not in the same division or even the same conference. So you'd think, ah, maybe it makes sense, you know. But yeah, Raiders aren't going to try to help out the 49ers. You know, they tried to, you know, they have to move to Las Vegas because they can't get a stadium in the Bay Area, and the 49ers got a brand new fancy stadium in the Bay Area. So I think there's no love lost between the organizations, and they've competed in the same market for a long time. And I doubt the Raiders would help out the 49ers like that, even if the 49ers gave them what they thought Khalil Mack was worth. But Khalil Mack's not going to get traded anyways, even though he would be a stud. It'd be an awesome, I mean, there's maybe no player I'd rather try to get than Khalil Mack right now on the 49ers. Dante Pettis looks good. This is from David. How excited should I be, and what do you think realistic expectations for him as a rookie are? I would say realistic expectations for Dante Pettis as a rookie is to be a very good kick returner and then be the number four wide receiver. And if someone like, say, Pierre Garçon or Marquise Goodwin gets hurt, now you have a starting rookie wide receiver that would have a chance to develop with Jimmy Garoppolo, and I think he would make some plays. And I like, and with Trent Taylor being hurt, and I don't know how long this injury is going to linger for him, maybe Dante Pettis is lining up in the slot from week one. That'll be an interesting thing to monitor. This from Tommy on Twitter, excited about how explosive our offense is going to be. I can see us putting up a ton of points on the board this year. Do you think we have possibly the best linebacking core in the league right now? Certainly in the argument anyways. Yeah, I mean, there's some good linebacking groups around the league. Seattle has one. Minnesota has one. There's definitely some other ones I'm not thinking of right now. But the 49ers could potentially be in that conversation, especially with the way Reuben Foster looks like he's going to progress as a pro, and he's absolutely for real, and he's going to be an all-pro player if everything off the field works out for him and he stays healthy. But, yeah, it's going to come down to Fred Warner. Right now they've got a nice group, but they're not in that category just yet, but they absolutely could be. Next year at this time, Tommy, check in. We might be talking about one of the better linebacking cores in the league. Solomon's excited to watch Goodwin and Pettis. Yep, they got some explosive wide receivers. A lot of people here excited about Dante Pettis. Cody's excited about Dante Pettis. John wants to know, what say you about the new kickoff rules? Do you think Shanahan will do some scheming for this shifty new return guy? I think every coach in the league is going to try to use whatever they can to their advantage. Absolutely. From Richard, he says it wasn't a good idea for Uncle Sherm to go against Goodwin in his first one-on-one. Hashtag ouch. I totally agree, Richard. Yeah, that was a rough one for Richard Sherman, especially with all the people with their cameras on him. You want that kind of a rep to happen when there's no fans, no cameras, no reporters around. Maybe that's why a lot of teams are kind of locked down at training camp. There was a tweet with a video, one single video about the Packers practices at training camp, and people are surprised. They're like, oh my God, those never get out. And the 49ers just have people everywhere at the facility while they're working out at training camp. Mike Wong, excited about wide receiver and running back depth. He says some real talent will get cut. I agree, Mike. And let's go to one more. This is from Joey on Twitter. Should I be excited that Joe Williams might be on the 53, or it might be a flash in the pan during camp? Now, Joe Williams has talent, and he's been his own worst enemy. Had, you know, some nagging injuries as well, but he's been really his own worst enemy through college. And then last year, we don't really know the full story. It seemed like he was put on the shelf for a reason other than his actual injury. And but Kyle Shanahan, talent-wise, saw something he loved on film from him. And he talked to John Lynch into putting him back on the draft board and even trading up to draft him in 2017. So he loves the talent. And he's been displaying some of that in camp, but it's really going to be rough for him to be suiting up on game day. If Raheem Mostert's on the team and he's the special teams guy, you got to suit him up. And you got to so Joe Williams would have to beat out Breida for the backup job. And Breida, by all reports, has looked great in camp as well. And then Jerick McKinnon's the starter. So it's going to be a battle there. And Joe Williams has to be the number two guy, I think, to suit up, especially if Mostert makes the roster, because then otherwise it's going to be McKinnon, Breida, and Mostert, the three running backs who suit up on game day. But Joe Williams has some game-breaking ability. Last preseason, if you go, if you have the game pass or you have the ability to go watch some of those preseason games last year before they put Joe Williams on the shelf, man, he had a couple of runs. I can't remember which game it was, but just broke off 16-yard runs. I think two of them, they're just like, boom. And he puts his foot in the ground on those outside zone runs, finds his hole and hits it, and he's got burst, and he's gone. So I do like some things I see from Joe Williams. He's got to be able to keep from putting the ball on the ground, and he's got to prove that he's dedicated. And then I think he could be actually a player for the 49ers. All right, that's going to do it. Tomorrow, my guest is going to be Mr. Nick Winkler for another Winky Wednesday. Going to have Rob Lauder joining me on Thursday. Then Oscar Aparicio of Better Rivals will be joining me on Monday, I believe. So a lot of great guests coming up. We're going to continue to talk about training camp and the preseason games that are about to happen. And it's football time. It's exciting stuff. Talk to you guys then right here on Locked On 49ers.